if we want to overcome the darkness in our lives, the darkness that creeps in, the things that we struggle with, the things that are hard for us, we have to be willing to do something, to change something, to try something different.
And I'm convinced that the human spirit was not designed to simply maintain normal. Somewhere along the line, we forget that our job wasn't to maintain normal. Our job was to step into an unprecedented future where God continually presses us into what's next.
God will never ask you to respond to a call that doesn't already speak to the best part of you, the part of you that was designed for greatness, that deep down knows that there is something more.
Hey, and welcome to the Mosaic Pomona podcast. I hope that you enjoy this week's talk and want to invite you to join us live on Sundays at 10 a.m. at the Glasshouse Concert Hall in beautiful downtown Pomona. Or you can join the conversation at www.mosaicpomona.org. You can also download the Mosaic Pomona app on iTunes or Android and keep up with the conversation and community there. If you would like to financially support this podcast and the ongoing movement at Mosaic Pomona, visit us online at mosaicpomona.org/give or check out the giving option on the Mosaic app. Enjoy this week's talk. My name's Nathan. I'm our lead pastor here. It's so exciting to have you with us this morning, our first Sunday in October. All right. How many of you are ready for Halloween? How many are ready for Christmas? Yes. All right. Awesome. We're in the middle of a conversation that we're calling disciple and what it looks like to be a follower of Jesus and have a life that's worth following. And so let's pause this morning before we jump into this conversation and let's pray together. Jesus, you're so beautiful, and from you, you create so much beauty in us, God. And you paint so much beauty in the world around us, God. We are thankful that we get to meet with you, God, here in this place. We love you. God, would you teach us to mold our lives to look more like you on the regular, God? Would you teach us to become more like you, to become students, disciples, followers, apprentices of your ways, that we might look different as a result of even being together here today? We're grateful for your interactions with us. In Jesus' name, amen. Well, disciple is not a word that we often use in today's vernacular. We don't oftentimes walk around describing ourselves as disciples. And disciple simply means a follower, a learner, an apprentice, someone who studies something. In fact, every single one of us in some point in time have been apprentices, learners, disciples of something. Whether you've been a learner at a school or a university, or whether you have a hobby or a trade that you've engaged in, every single one of us have some type of thing that we've been following. It's always fascinating for me to find out what people have been apprentices of. I love to ask people, like, what are some things that you do for fun, or what are some things that are your hobbies? And it's interesting to find everything from, like, juggling to magic to horticulture. Just finding out what people are into is fascinating to me, because every single one of us were designed to both follow and be followed. That's how God created the human species, that we were all designed to follow something and to have someone follow us, to be influenced and moved by our life. If you ask any great leader in the world, they will tell you who they are currently following right now. Even though they may be at the pinnacle of their field, at the height of their success, they will inform you of who their lives are moving towards or being informed by. The problem is that we want people to follow us before we ever become the disciple of someone else. We want the influence without the discipline of being a disciple. We live in a follow me generation where oftentimes like greetings come with, hey, you should follow me on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, right? Because there's something about having a number of followers that boosts our ego and excites us. But what I love is that Jesus calls us into a discipleship relationship, to be a disciple, a follower, apprentice, a learner of him. And that in that we might find freedom. That he calls us and says, hey, make me your Lord. Make me the one who you study and who you submit to and who you engage with, and I will set you free in the middle of it. See, every other master and every other teacher of our souls will end up enslaving us. Well, when we find ourselves disciples of money or power, we will often find ourselves enslaved by the very thing that we are following. But the crazy thing is Jesus says, you're not going to be enslaved by me. You will follow me. And if you submit everything to me, I will actually set you free. And that's really what we've been after, is what it looks like to live a life filled with freedom that others would want to follow after us. Not filled with religion and legalism and rules, but that we would actually connect to a God who transforms us and then creates in us a story that others would be compelled to engage with. And so we've talked over the last few weeks about how a follower, a disciple, engages in lordship, that they actually connect to God as master, how they will, the world will know that we are followers of Jesus by love, that is the defining characteristic of a disciple, not judgment or even truth, but love is the first and foremost thing that we would be known by. And last week we talked about how disciples are lovers of truth, that they are followers of truth, that they hunger after truth because we know that truth is what sets us free, that truth is what allows us to see the world accurately and to gauge everything else by the truth that we find ourselves in. And you know, one thing that fascinates me about the human experience, there's things that come that connect us all together. I love studying what makes us different, but I love what makes us all the same. And one of the things that every single human being does on the planet is dream. It's strange, right? I mean, we dream at night, of course, of strange lands and of bizarre situations or horrifying acts that take place. And at night, as we dream, it gives us a snapshot or a picture into our subconscious, into the soul, into what's really going on, maybe behind our own understanding and our own knowledge. But we all dream, and this can give us an underlying conversation there. But the fact of the matter is that every single human being also dreams wide awake. That we have dreams about the future, about who we're becoming, that we are the only species that longs for a future that is exponentially more better than our past, that we long to become something and moving towards that. And if you doubt that, if you have anything on your calendar between now and when you die, that is evidence that you have some type of dream drive to dream. Or else you wouldn't put something on your calendar tomorrow, right? There'd be no reason to have anything scheduled between now and when we put you in the ground if you didn't dream. Because we are driven to create some type of future that is distinct from our past. See, you are designed to be a dreamer, a planner, a builder of futures. That is what you were designed to do. This is part of being made in the image of God. Because God is a dreamer, creator, inventor of futures. That's what he does. He dreams up universes and he speaks them into existence and then he interacts with them into the future. And it shouldn't be a surprise that we are the exact same. It's part of our unique part of being image bearers of God. Because no other species on the planet does this. Never once has my dog had the thought, man, I really need to better myself because I feel like I'm really going downhill and tomorrow's not going to be as beautiful as it was yesterday, right? There's no drive to become a better dog. No giraffe wakes up thinking, man, if I could just get my neck a little stronger, if I could work this thing out, I would be amazing. When there's no other drive, it's because we as human beings are the only ones on the planet that were actually made in God's image. And so that leaked into the very DNA inside of us. And one of the indicators, actually, that our soul is sick is when we stop dreaming. That's one of the biggest indicators that our soul is sick is when we stop dreaming or we cannot actually see a tomorrow that is exponentially more beautiful than the past. That is when we find ourselves stuck. It's actually where death enters into the human story because suicide is connected to a heart sickness that says, there is nothing worth living for in your future. And it cuts off all possibilities for stepping into what's next. And that's the indicator of who we are. There's an interesting passage in Romans chapter 8, verse 28. If you have a copy of the scriptures, you can go with me there. If you need a Bible or a copy of the scriptures, you can just raise your hand. One of our team members will give you one. And we love giving out Bibles here at Mosaic Pomona. It's one of our favorite things. So grab that. Romans 8, 28. This is a verse that's often quoted, and it says this, and we know that in all things, God works for good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. And we know that in all things, God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. This means that in everything, in all times, God is working things together for good. That is what he is up to. Now, it doesn't mean that everything in the universe is good. It means that he is simply working everything that we have decided is good, bad, ugly, broken, beautiful. He's taking all of it. Not just the beautiful moments, not the moments that we wish to throw away. He's like, no, I want to take those two, and I want to create something beautiful, a mosaic, if you will, out of all of the pieces of your life. That means there is never a moment where he is not attempting to create something good out of your life, because his essence is goodness. That's who he is at his core. He cannot be anything else. And this is, there's proof that God is so good, because God would actually bankrupt heaven by giving everything he had in the person of Jesus to prove to us his goodness. He would go to the nth degree to prove to us that he himself at his core is good. So in any situation, if you know that it is not good, you know that it is not over. That if it's not good yet, it is not finished. That we know that that is where God is moving, because when things start moving together for good, we know, oh, that's where God's intervening in the middle of that, and he's still moving. So it shouldn't be a surprise that as a follower of Jesus, as a disciple of Jesus, as an apprentice of Jesus, it shouldn't be a shock that he calls us to be apprentices of hope. That he calls us into that space. That he calls us into to be learners, so that we could actually be called out to be a voice of hope in a world that so desperately needs someone declaring hope over the world. In darkness and in any situation that comes up, that is what he calls us into. And there's this moment that I love that Jesus steps into with his disciples that shows us how this principle really works. Turn with me to Luke chapter 8, verse 22. We're going to go to this moment with Jesus in Luke chapter 8, starting in verse 22. And it says this. One day Jesus said to his disciples, let's go over to the other side of the lake. So they got into a boat and set out, and they sailed, and he fell asleep. A squall came down on the lake so that the boat was being swamped, and they were in great danger. And the disciples went and woke him, saying, Master, Master, we're going to drown. He got up and rebuked the wind and the raging waters. The storm subsided, and all was calm. Where is your faith? He asked the disciples. In fear and amazement, they asked one another, who is this? He commands even the winds and the water, and they obey him. I love this moment in the scriptures that Jesus steps into, because the disciples find themselves in a very exciting situation here, a very arousing situation that they find themselves here in this moment, because it started off on what appeared to be a beautiful day for sailing. And off they go into the lake at Jesus' request, and they started there with what I call their baseline of hope. Every single one of us operate from a baseline of hope. This is that hope that exists in the background. It's kind of like the idle in your car. It keeps you moving. It keeps you going. It's what allows you to get up in the morning, to get dressed. It's what allows you to put food in your body and to keep moving. It's the hope that says, hey, you need to keep surviving. You need to keep going. You at least need to be alive today. There's this baseline of hope that every single one of us exists in, that we just live in without even thinking about. And here the disciples find themselves in here, where they're just, hey, it's a good day. We're doing what we've always done. We're going to get in the boat. We're going to go out and sailing. Jesus wants to. Let's do this. This isn't anything abnormal from what they had been doing day after day after day in this place. See, you and I exist with some base level of hope. Like I said, it's what gets us out of bed. It's what keeps us going. It's what moves us forward. And we are keenly aware when our soul is sick, like I said earlier, because most of the time we're unaware of our base level of hope. It's kind of like the operating system in our computer. But when we find ourselves in spaces of depression or anxiety or hopelessness, we become keenly aware of our baseline hope. Like, hey, I just have to get out of bed today. Ever been there? I just have to get up and eat and move on. We become aware of our baseline hope when we lower ourselves to that level. We find ourselves in that space. And see, actually, this is why I know that God is a God of abundance. That he's not a God of just normal or providing needs. Because every single one of us live with this baseline hope, but not any one of us is actually satisfied with it. That's how I know that God is a God of abundance. Because he said, you have enough hope to get up and to survive through the day, but that's not what you want. That's not what you long for. You don't want to just survive. You have this calling inside of you that says there is something more, there is something bigger, there is something greater. If I would step into something beyond just surviving, I might find myself in an elevated state of life. That's how I know that God is a God of abundance. Because he wouldn't have created us with baseline hope and a drive for more. That would be cruel, right? If he wasn't planning on giving us more. That's how I know that God longs for us to step into there. But here, the disciples find themselves on a nice sailing day, and suddenly a storm comes in. Suddenly they found themselves overtaken by the wind and the raging waters, and it ruins the party. Ever been there in life? Where things are going good, you're existing on baseline hope, moving through the day, not really thinking about it, and then a storm hits. The diagnosis comes, you get the phone call, work suddenly lays you off, you finally suddenly find yourself back in old addictions, anxiety feels like it's overwhelming, or depression hits home at such a deep level. Those moments where it feels like the despair is caving in and it's a struggle just to breathe. Those moments where the storm hits. And that's where the disciples find themselves there, because suddenly their baseline hope was insufficient for what was taking place around them. That's where we find ourselves when storm comes, because the thing about storms is that they reach into our soul and begin to suck at the well of hope. They both form and inform the hope that lives inside of us. You know what you're made of when storms come. Because if it reaches into the depths of you and there is not a well of hope available, it will take you out. But if you reach down and there's hope available inside of you, you will actually move forward in the storms. And the disciples found themselves here in this moment where it felt like all hope was lost, where they were again digging themselves into this ditch, and they all began basically crying, "We're going to die." I mean, I don't know about you. I've been there many times before. We're going to die. I mean, you don't even have to be that dramatic to know that you've been there at times before. Like, this is it. Everything's falling apart. The world's over. I might as well give up. This is where they find themselves. Meanwhile, Jesus, punk, is asleep, right? He's asleep. I imagine that he's below deck on like a nice comfy couch, just enjoying himself. Meanwhile, the disciples are freaking out on deck, right? Screaming about how they're gonna die at the wind and the waves and everything that was there. And he's just chilling there. Have you ever found yourself in a space of hopelessness and felt like God was asleep? Have you ever felt yourself there? Like you find yourself in the depths of despair and darkness, and you're crying out for God, and it feels like he's asleep. It feels like he's absent from the equation. And it's almost like insult to injury. He's not just down there like, "Hey, you got it, guys. I'm praying for you," right? He's not even doing that. He's asleep. He's out. He is unconscious to the situation, right? I don't know how many times in my life I have found myself at the depths of despair and I cry out and it feels like Jesus is asleep and I wonder where he is. And in the moment, it feels like all hope is lost in the middle of all of that. Like he's not interested in your cries. Well, like he's not actually interested in stepping into the reality that you're living in, the atmosphere of hopelessness that you find yourself. And I can imagine his shock when he woke up. I can imagine his shock when he wakes up in the middle of this, like, "Whoa, what's going on?" Because the disciples are screaming, "We're dying, we're going down, the wind and the water are overtaking us, help us, you are our only hope," right? In the middle of this. But I love that he gets up and he speaks directly to the wind and to the water, and they immediately calm in the middle of this. He gets up. After the disciples have roused him, and he freaks out, and he begins speaking out to the waves, "Stop." He begins speaking out to the waters, "Stop." He rebukes them, and they immediately stop in that moment. See, I think that Jesus was sleeping in the middle of this because in his reality, in the spiritual reality in which he exists, there are no hopeless storms. That's the reality that Jesus exists in. That's the atmosphere that he creates when he steps into our lives, that there are no storms that actually lead you to a space of desperation and hopelessness. And so he could sleep through them because he understood that they were just fine. Meanwhile, the disciples were freaking out. See, there is no moment where Jesus finds himself out of control. There is no moment where Jesus suddenly finds himself in a space of desperation and wondering what's going to happen, and he could sleep and rest because this is his spiritual reality. And guess what? In his spiritual reality, there is no context for fear. There is no petri dish for fear to spring up in. There is no space for worry or doubt or depression in the middle of this, because in his spiritual reality, there is always hope in the midst of the storm. See, I find that so often we're calling out for God to invade our realities. We're saying, God, would you come step into my reality? You have no idea what's going on over here, and I need you over here in my reality. Come change the storm of my finances. Come change the storm of my marriage. Come change the storm of my career. Come change the storm of my mental health. Come change the storm of my reality over here on the other side. And as a disciple, I think that Jesus is not interested in stepping into our reality. As a disciple, he's interested in us stepping into his spiritual reality in the middle of the storm. That's a good word. You can clap for that. Go for it. Clap. All right, so he's interested in us stepping into his reality in the middle of that storm, because in his reality, hope reigns. In our reality, there is a boat that is about to be taken over by water and wind, and there is nothing to stop it. In his reality, there is just rebuke and peace. That's what exists there. And he says, look, I'm not interested in coming into your reality, because in your reality, there is hopelessness. But in my reality, you will find yourself there. And when we see the storm from a new spiritual perspective, from his perspective, all of a sudden, he turns our declaration of, oh no, we're going to die, into an invitation to declare hope over our storms, to declare hope into those situations. That's what he invites us into in the middle of that. Because I love that Jesus responds to his disciples with some pretty harsh words, right? I mean, poor guys, they think that they're about to die in the middle of all of this. And he looks at them and he says, where is your faith? See, I think that this, it translates, in my mind, it translates like this. You woke me up for this? Ever been woken up for something stupid, you know? I think Jesus was like, you woke me up for this? Where is your faith? Right? In the middle of this. And he's like, why did you wake me up to fix this? Because as a disciple, I think sometimes God longs for you and your faith to declare hope. For you to look at the storm and partner with him and say, no, I got this. Not because I'm special, but because Christ abides in me, so I can declare hope over my storm. There is no moment where I need to wait for God to intervene, because God is with me. And if I would be willing to step into his reality, I can declare hope in the middle of this. And instead of him simply rescuing you from fear, instead of him coming and changing your situation and in the middle of that, he's coming and he wants to change your circumstances once you step into his reality. See, for some of you, maybe you have been waiting and waiting and waiting for God to show up to do the miraculous. Some of you for years may have been waiting for God to show up and do something miraculous, unprecedented in your life. And see, what he's saying is, where is your faith? Where is your faith? He said, I could obviously step up and declare this, but when you connect to me, when your life connects to me, you are never without hope. So where is your faith to declare this in the middle of the storms that we find ourselves there? See, the crazy thing is that Jesus is interfering, that the same is inferring in this moment, that the same power that he has inside of him to rebuke the wind and the waves and have them stop, to literally say, stop, and have the storms calmed in the middle of that, he's inferring that that same power was available to his disciples right there because they were connected to him. See, if not, he would be cruel in saying, where is your faith? It wouldn't make sense, right? He would be a jerk saying, look what I can do, what can you do, right? That's not what he's saying. He's saying, the same power that I had to just say, stop it, you have within you because you're connected with me. What, next time the storm comes, you just need to rise up your level of hope and faith and just say, stop, because it is within you. See, the thing about the disciples in the moment, they were unwilling to step up. They had seen Jesus do the unprecedented, and they had seen even Jesus do the unprecedented through them. And they still were unwilling to step up into this moment. See, apprentices of Jesus recognize that we have an unending well of hope available to us, and that it is our not just right, but our responsibility to begin declaring hope over the storms around us. It is our responsibility connected to him to begin declaring hope over the storms around us. I mean, look at Genesis chapter 1, starting in verse 27, when God creates us. In Genesis chapter 1, starting in verse 27, he says this. So God created mankind in his own image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. So we were created in his image. And he said, God blessed them and said, be fruitful and increase in number. Fill the earth and subdue it. Rule over the fish in the sea and the birds of the sky, over every living creature that moves on the ground. Now there's a very interesting phrase that he calls us into as an act of human beings. You and I, in the middle of this, he says, look, I am putting you in this perfect context, the Garden of Eden, and he gives us this command. You are to subdue it. Kind of a crazy command in the middle of perfection, right? He says, you are to subdue it. To subdue something means to overcome or to bring under control. Which means that even in the middle of this context that they found themselves in, there were things that they needed to overcome, and there were things that they needed to control. Or else he wouldn't say you need to subdue it. It would already been subdued, right? He actually puts us into the middle of this perfect context and says, your responsibility is to bring this into control, into goodness. This is the mandate over your life from the very beginning of creation, to step into places that are out of control, that are filled with hopelessness and darkness, and to subdue them until God's goodness and hope shines through. You can clap for that. That's another good word, just in case you missed it. This is our calling from the very beginning. It is the very DNA that God has spoken into your life. See, some of you have abdicated your God-given responsibility and position as a voice of hope in your world. You've just given up your responsibility to be the one that subdues the places that are out of control and to subdue the places that feel like they are overrun with hopelessness and to speak hope into those places. See, some of you, God is actually calling to step up and start declaring hope over your family. He's saying, look, it's time to get up and start declaring hope over your finances. It's time to start getting up and declaring hope over your health, over your career, over the situations that you find yourselves in, their hopelessness in, over your own mental health, over the spaces, over your city that you live in, because you are the only tangible source of Jesus on the planet. That he is in you, and that you are be the one that was designed to declare hope everywhere you go. Just as Jesus spoke to the wind and spoke to the water and said, rebuke, and it stopped, you were designed to speak peace over every space that you step into. Yeah. That hope should be the melody that comes out of your life in any way, shape, and form. But in order to know when to speak, you actually first have to see it. You have to step into his reality and view the world through the lens that he sees the world through. Because I guarantee you, when you start seeing the world through his lens, all of a sudden the storm is not as scary as you thought it was just a minute ago. And then it's like, what was I afraid of? Let's start declaring hope, because that is what I am called to step into. See, the problem is that most of us live as thermometers. That's actually how most of us live. See, the job of a thermometer is to take a reading of the atmosphere and to declare out the atmosphere that's currently therein. That's the job of a thermometer. That's what they do. So many of us live like thermometers. We take the spiritual temperature of our lives and the lives around us, and we just start declaring it. I'm depressed. That city's a mess. Our country's crazy, right? We just start declaring, like, hey, I'm the thermometer. This is what's going on. I just want to declare to you what my current spiritual condition is. And people who are thermometers just simply go around informing the world of what's going on in the world and in them around us. See, we start declaring things like, well, my finances are a mess, or I really would like this, or if this could only happen over here. We end up simply informing rather than stepping into a space of transformation. That's where we find ourselves. And the same thing, the crazy thing is that we end up declaring things that are true as capital truth, and we actually begin reinforcing them in our lives. We just start declaring them as if they were true. And what God is saying is, you were not actually designed to be a thermometer, because thermometers have no power to actually change anything. Their only job is to declare reality. And the longer that you live in a thermometer spiritual mindset, you will find yourself in hopelessness. And hopelessness always leads to shame. Always. Because you are ashamed of the condition that you find yourself in, because you have no power to transform it. You have only the power to declare what is. This is where the disciples found themselves. Master, we're going down. We're going to die. Right? They were just a thermometer shouting out, this is what's happening. Right? And we find ourselves so easily there. But as disciples, Jesus, as disciples of Jesus and his hope, we were actually designed to be thermostats. That's what he calls us to be. That's what he calls us into, to be, because your storm was not there to take you out. Your storm was there to transform you. That's what it was there for. And for you to transform the world around you in the middle of it. See, what I love about thermostats is they don't just declare the current temperature. They do. They take the temperature and then they change it. That's what they do. That's what they're designed to do. They're designed to step into the atmosphere and transform it. They read it, and then they subjugate it to the truth of God in the moment. They say, I know this looks like hopelessness over here, but we are going to subjugate it over here. See, it says, in the same way it says, like it's like a temperature, a thermometer says, it's too hot. Let's make it a little cooler. In the same way it goes, oh, wow, there's anxiety over here. We are going to subdue that to the hope of Jesus. Oh, my gosh, there's depression over here. We are going to subdue that to the hope of Jesus. Oh, man, there's relationships that are falling apart over here. We are going to subdue that to the hope of Jesus. Oh, my gosh, there are drowning in poverty and finances and injustice and racism and all types of craziness in the world. We're going to subdue that to the hope of Jesus. See, that's what thermostats do. And you were designed to change the spiritual atmosphere by boldly declaring the hope of God in your life. This is who we were called to be. By the way, you are especially called to be a thermometer, when thermostat, when you don't feel like it. Especially. Oh yeah, and this is why we actually need an external gauge for reality, like we talked about last week. Because you cannot know the hopelessness that needs eradicating in the world until you know the hope that's available. You cannot muster up your own source of hope. You need an external source. And this is why this, when you connect to Jesus as your source of hope, this is why it transforms it from just wishful thinking into actual spiritual transformation as his disciples. And Christians are so guilty of this. They abdicate their responsibility so fast. Like, hey, just Jesus will do it. He'll take care of it. And what he's saying is, no. I am in you for a purpose so that you can take care of it. So that you can actually step into that space and change the world around you. See, when I am connected to hope and truth, I can declare those things over the atmosphere. See, some of you are stuck because you have just been declaring hopelessness over your life. You have situations and circumstances that you have just determined to be capital T truth forever who you are. And this is not actually the case. I love this Proverbs. In Proverbs 13:12, it says this. It says, hope deferred makes the heart sick. Have you ever felt heart sick because hope was just deferred? What I love is that Jesus says, you never have to be hope sick, heart sick, ever. Because this is available to you. And I used to read that verse thinking, yeah, that's why my heart's sick. Hope has been deferred. But you know what I realize? I realize that I am existing in a world filled with hopelessness, and thus I am living in a world where there is heart sickness. And it's all around me. And I realize that this verse was actually designed to inform me that I am living in a world where waters are raging and wind is at its peak, and people have found themselves in the darkness that they cannot get out of. See, because when I look around in my world, what I look at and I see is I say, wow, there is a lot of heart sickness going on because hope has been deferred. And I can either look at that and say, that sucks, hope someone comes, or be at a distance and say, hey, God, we're just gonna have a hold a prayer meeting about it, right? But what I love is that what Jesus says is, where is your faith? Because you were designed to be the one that declares boldly hope into the world around you. See, you were not just designed to be like, hey, I'm gonna create this wonderful atmosphere around me. I declare hope over me. I declare goodness over me. I declare financial prosperity over me. You were out there in the world to say, no, not just over me, over you. Over my friends, over my family, over my coworkers, over my neighbors, over my city, over my state, the country, the globe, that we were meant to be voices of hope in the world around us. And that is what we were called to. And as you step up as disciples of hope, as apprentices of hope, as learners of hope, you will find yourself transforming the world around you, free from fear, anxiety, worry, and the storms will no longer mean much to us. Would you guys stand to your feet real fast? I've asked the band to just help us sing this song one more time. And it's a song that many of you know, but I want to sing it one last time. And I want this to be a declaration, not like a hope, like, oh man, I hope that I'm no longer a slave to fear, but like a declaration over our lives and the lives of our city, the people around us, that we're saying, I am no longer going to be a thermometer just going around and going, man, this world sucks, right? But that I am going to be a force of hope in the world. And I am no longer going to be given in to the wind and the rains and the crying out, oh no, we're going down. But I am going to declare that it is no longer me who lives, but Christ in me, and there is nothing to fear. So let's sing that out. I'm no longer. Let's just declare that.
Thanks for listening to this week's talk. Join us next week for a new conversation or download the Mosaic Pomona app to continue interacting with the Mosaic Pomona community. Thanks and have a great week.